I'm going to give the talk on how we're trying to scale professional translation using the crowd. And I think that everyone knows here that the internet is diverging. So around 1997, 80% of the content was in English. That is not the case right now, and this is just going to keep decreasing the amount of content in English. And one thing that happens is that as people start having a lot of content in their own language, they only want to consume that content. So it's more and more important for companies to basically talk in the customer's language. But I guess we all know here this on this audience. And the other thing is, like, there's so much content that needs to be translated that, according to Common Sense Advisory, all of the language technology together couldn't translate 1% of the content that needs to be translated. So obviously, there has to be a role in machine translation nowadays. The question is, like, what is the role? So the question that I've been hearing from our investors, customers, is if machine translation is already there. Can we fully support and rely on machine translation? So I think that, you know, there was neural machine translation, which was a step in terms of quality. And I think, at least for me, I think everyone is convinced that neural machine translation is going to replace the previous methods. We've done some internal experience on customer service, and we observe exactly the same things. But the main question is machine translation there? Can we stop using professional translators? And personally, I don't think so. This is like a plot from the Google blog, which was very interesting. On one side, it basically pissed off everyone in the industry. And there was a lot of papers and blog posts describing how this comparison was not fair, how this is not actually true. But on the other side, people that are not from the domain start thinking, maybe machine translation is there. I actually heard a talk from an OpenAI person in San Francisco claiming that language was a solved problem. And I know it's not, at least I believe it's not. But then there's this question. The other thing is, like, customers are more willing to just try machine translation than they were before. So that's been hitting us more and more. So personally, we think there's, like, if you look like a batch of jobs, so this is a fake data. This is just to put an idea. So if you send like 10, 100 jobs for machine translation, I think you're always going to have like jobs that are perfect, if the machine translation keeps improving, and jobs that are really bad. And the point is, are your customers willing to receive the really bad jobs or not? If they are, for the particular domain case, then it's fine. Let's just do machine translation. If they're not, you always have to be careful with the red spots. I think there's like two main trends about where this is going. So basically, there are the people that think, okay, machine translation is not at the point that is good enough, so let's just sell it and hope that with time the quality improves. And I'm considering like MQM has a quality metric, and I'm assuming based on Philip Cohen's last paper that I read about it, that 95 MQM is around professional quality, so that's where we're going to be. So this is one view, and okay, you can see where this is going. And there's a different view, which is saying, no, we always want to serve quality around 95% MQM, or whatever it's needed for a particular use case. But what we're going to use is like use all of this technology and reduce the human effort that is necessary to get there. So you can think about it like the amount of words that gets translated grows exponentially, but the amount of professional translators or translators that is needed grows linearly. And this is kind of like the approach that we're trying to follow since the beginning at Unbabel. Again, just to rephrase this, so there's like green jobs, good quality, red jobs, bad quality, yellow jobs, it depends. And so really, what we're trying to do is like, given a job, we pass it by our machine translation, and then basically the main module is quality estimation. I think quality estimation is going to play a very important role on what we're trying to achieve. Because basically what we want to do is, if the job is good, send it. Those are the green dots. If it's not, then let's get someone to correct the translation. And this is very interesting because this generates, first of all, a very interesting loop. So every time that machine translation is actually not there, then you're getting more data to retrain the entire system. So you can train the machine translation, quality estimation, automatic post editing, and so on and so forth. The other thing that is interesting is now, even that you have the entire pipeline, you can start getting even more interesting data. So instead of just parallel sentences, you can start getting keystrokes, and you can start doing some interesting analysis and see what are the actions that the editors are actually doing in order to correct the translation. And needless to say that this is opening like a different kind of models that you can implement on top of this data. So basically what I'm going to cover is like what are the three pieces that we're using to build this pipeline. So in terms of machine translation, I think this is like pretty standard to everyone that is selling customized machine translation. So we use translation memories if we have full matches on full sentences. Otherwise, we have customer domain machine translation models. If we don't have enough data for a customer, then we go back to a model that is trained for a particular domain, and then to a more general model. After that, we also have an automatic post-editing module because it can capture a lot of the frequent mistakes that machine translation does, especially when you're using like phrase-based machine translation system. Those things are really important. And then that's it. That's your initial translation. Again, so we used to use phrase-based machine translation. We're now using neural machine translation. It took a little bit longer because we have to deal with glossaries and markups, and that was kind of a challenge, but we're now deploying it. And then the question is, like, how does machine translation adapt for, like, a new customer data? And it's very interesting. It's like, you see, like, Google neural machine translation and our general domain neural machine translation, which is much worse than Google, I think. We don't have enough data, and we still haven't hacked all the details that you need to improve it, so we're working on that. But then it just takes like 1,000 sentences to get to Google Translate results, and then with 25,000 sentences, you're actually much better. So you can actually start having this huge range of machines and just onboard the customer, use the general model, and then as you keep translating data, just try and switch to yours. So the other thing that I told you that's very important for us is quality estimation. And this was really an effort that we started working on around 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, and we started with the tasks of word-level quality estimation and the tasks of sentence-level quality estimation. So just to give you an idea, this is a translation, and the word level is supposed to tell you for each word if it was a good translation or a bad translation. And then the sentence level can just combine these results and produce a sentence-level prediction. Basically, to train it, you just use the source sentence, the machine translation, and the final output. And there have been some pretty good results. So this was like the second place on last year's WMT competition. This was a linear model using a bunch of syntax and morphological features that performed really well. Then we implemented an extension to the Quetch system from last year, and we got some improvements. And then the combination got our best results for the shard task. And then during the conference, we were talking with Marcin about the automatic editor automatic post-editing task, and realize, well, they're really similar, because if you're correcting something, then it means it's broken. So let's just try that for quality estimation, and the results were really strong. And then if you join everything together, you got like the best result reported so far for word-level quality estimation. And then after the competition, we tried it for sentence-level quality estimation, again with the same model, so the neural model plus the linear model, the ape model, and then both of them combined, and it's got really interesting results. So this is pretty much where you are on quality estimation. And you know, the word level is really useful to use on the interfaces to kind of show where there might be potential errors. The sentence level we can use to hide some segments from the editor, or at least show them in a different tone so he doesn't spend a lot of time. But that's not really where we want to go. So what we need to implement this pipeline is to actually have a good document level quality estimation. This is super important, and we're working very actively on that. And on the other hand, once you actually send the machine translation to post-editing, then all of these systems start failing. They're really fine-tuned for like a particular machine translation system. So what you need to do is like human quality estimation. And unfortunately, I was hoping to be able to bring some numbers on this here, but it'll have to wait for a little bit. But this is basically our focus currently in terms of quality estimation, where we're getting. Okay, so now let's assume that we got all of the green dots on the ideal world. Now we have to deal with the other ones. And this is where a professional translator comes into play. And here, the challenge is like, you need to have quality, which is not as easy as we thought it was in the beginning of Unbabel. You need to be fast. So we're focusing a lot on conversational scenarios. So speed is like of the essence. And you need to reduce the cost, because a lot of this content that is being produced massively does not have the return on investment to charge 8 cents per word. So you need to come up with a solution that you can still provide the desired quality at speed at a much lower cost. And we believe like the pillars in which we're trying to build this system are the following. So the first one is like, what is the editor pool that you're taking your translators from? And here, we're basically using the crowd. and I can talk about that for a lot of time if you want, but we believe that there aren't enough professional translators for the massive amount of content that exists, and also for some of the content that we're actually translating, you don't need a professional. You can use a bilingual with certain knowledge if you provide him the right tools. The other part is what is the initial machine translation. So the better it is, the easier it is to fix. And again, you know, the views of like machine translation only or always reduced human effort, they're kind of the same, because if you're doing one, we're improving the other one. So they work on pairs. The other part is like, now that you have a crowd, who do you pick to give a given job? You know, it's everyone knows that if you give a job to someone that is an expert on the terminology, on the domain, he'll do much better. For instance, ask me to correct something about soccer and I can do a good job. Ask me to translate something about food and I'll be really bad. Or at least I need to do a lot of research, which kills the time part. Then it's like, what are the interfaces, the CAT tools that you provide to the editors? And finally, can you keep constantly evaluating the quality of what is being produced? So we currently have around 50,000 users on the Babel community. And one thing that I like to stress is like, how do you see the process? So we don't think that producing quality at speed should be something that is the responsibility of a particular translator. So it's not about optimizing one person, it's about optimizing the entire system. So you basically, if it's a large text, we get it, we chunk it into pieces, we send each piece to the community, we evaluate the quality. If we need to put someone else there, if not, we just send it to the final part. On the final part, we join everything together. If we had document level quality estimation working perfectly, that was it. If not, we actually have one human that goes check for consistency. And this is basically the pipeline when we're using translators. And so this is pretty standard. So we start with some really basic testing tasks where the editor is evaluated automatically. This is mostly to like explain the system and make sure that he at least understands the language, and some basic tricks that you can put, like replace words and see if he checks the words. Then we get him like close to similar real tasks, which is the training phase, and then they need to be evaluated. And then they become paid editors. And during their lifetime, they can be promoted and demoted if they don't keep the quality. And then from the paid editors, we start building like groups of expertise for per domain. Then we also have another group, which is more like linguists or real professional translators, which are the people evaluating the rest of the crawl. And finally, we have even smaller, which is the annotators, which are mostly like linguists or linguist students. And what they do is like MQM annotations every week, so that we know exactly where we are at each language, and also provides us training data for other algorithms. So this is an example of evaluating a task of an editor. And here what's interesting is basically, we're not judging the final quality of the text, we're judging what the editor did. And this is really important because one thing we observe, given our model and all the editors, is sometimes there were really bad editors that just got lucky and they came after a good one. So they were getting really good ratings, although they didn't know what they're doing. And then when they actually had to do something by themselves, they'll basically kill us. So here what you're seeing is like you see the source text, what you produced, where did you start from and the changes. And if you didn't change anything, two things can happen. Either there are errors and you should be penalized, or if it's perfect, it starts perfect, it's perfect, then you don't get an evaluation. We give you another task. Because basically, we really want to know if you know what you're doing. So then there's a part of editor profiling. Like I said, people have like different domains. And the idea is that if you think about the Babel model, so we have a bunch of tasks on the system. It's not project-based. We don't assign people to projects. So people come online, either on a mobile phone or on the web, and they request a task. And we basically have the SLA. So some jobs we need to deliver in 20 minutes. Some jobs can take up to a couple of hours. So depending on the time that they are on the platform already and the time we need to deliver, they can go either to a red queue, meaning that you're really late, so no matter if you're a paid editor, just do it, or they go to the green queue, where we can start being smarter. And basically, we can take into account what is his actually rating, is he native on the target language or not, and then if we actually have topics for the documents using like LDA or any clustering algorithm, then we can use this to select the editor, the best editor. And we've been working with unsupervised topics because it's hard to come up with a fixed set of categories to tag, but there's still a lot of work to do here. And basically what we saw with some experiments is just like if you pick a bunch of tasks and give to an editor, if you actually use the topic, the rating that they get on average is much bigger, as expected. So in terms of editing interfaces, we have like on the left the web interface, the more usual one. So you can see There's the two texts. The editor can skip if he's not comfortable. He can report the task in case there's any problem. And then on the right pane, he can see the customer instructions. He has a dictionary search feature, and he has like smart check, which is basically helping you see where the errors are. And then we have the mobile interface. So we're trying to port everything on this to the mobile. And again, because people on the mobile tend to be much more responsive, and they're always online. So this comes because of the need for speed. And in fact, if you think about how long does it take to deliver a job to the customer. So the customer sends us a job via the API, and he wants to get it back. Well, so you always have the machine translation time. Then if you need some translator, you'll have like the time that the translator is waiting until getting the task. So the time that the task is just queue, and then the editing time. And actually, this waiting time is what kills you. It's not the editing time that takes longer. And then if you need to have a second translator to review, it's the same thing. And what we observe is like when you go on the mobile, this waiting time decreases a lot. Because basically, you can be much more efficient with a notification. He just gets pinged on the cell phone, takes a cell phone, corrects the task, and sends it. So this is pretty cool. And we're now doing like 25% of all our work on the mobile, and we wish that this keeps increasing over time. So just to give you an idea, this is kind of like the minutes to deliver, on average, 100 words over the last year. And you can see the bump there is because we start getting much more work to do, so the communities are not big enough. We had to go find more people, but the general trend is going down, which is always one of the objectives at Unbabel. The other thing is kind of like the smart check. So basically, what can you show in the interface in terms of errors? So the intuition is like, if you're not using professional translators, if you can provide them with the right tools and tell them where grammar errors are, spelling errors, tone, and all of that, potentially you can get the editor to perform the same level of quality. And this is where all this smart check technology exists. And basically, you know, think about language tool or grammar for word on correction on steroids that you offer the editor. So you have a team working on this. And besides, the other part that is really interesting is that you can actually talk with a customer. He'll give you like a huge style guide, and you go over and implement it on a smart check. Because given the model that I explained you, like the full model, you can't expect that for every customer you're going to be training the translators for that particular project, because that's not how we work. People can be getting tasks from different customers. So all of this gets embedded on the editing interface. And then the jobs get annotated, like I told you, and basically we can use the MQM annotations to relearn all this part. Okay, so basically all of this that I talked to you about is what we call the language engine. And what we're trying to do is like the last piece of the puzzle is how do you actually deliver the content to the customer in a seamless way, because most of these new contents come from companies that don't have like a localization department. They're just growing, they're like normally web companies, and now they want to address better other countries. But they do have connections with like Salesforce, Zendesk, Slack. And the idea is that basically on top of this thing, you can set up a bunch of APIs. So messaging API, which will give you like, it will return in X minutes, or email API, or product description API. And basically you can build a host of integrations or have someone build them for you on top of that. So just to give you an example, like something that we've been focusing a lot is customer service. So people go online and basically just reply, I lost my password, or what's happening with this new button, or something is broken. And this has a problem, because now when you're setting your customer service at your company, you have to worry about the level of difficulty of the question and also the language. And if you want to do 24/7, that can become a problem, especially if you're scaling. And so the idea is, like, if you use Unbabel, you can have like an English agent that is basically replying to the 30 languages that we provide. And everything is transparent. And the interesting part is that we actually did a study with a big customer, and the customer satisfaction is the same using Unbabel or using a native agent. And again, so our aim for this is like, you'll get the ticket returned to your customer in 20 minutes after you press the button to submit. And MQM is around 94% of quality. So this is our main use case so far. The other use case that is we're prototyping, it's in beta, it's in 3 customers, is actually Shed. So a lot of customer service is moving to Shed. And you have exactly the same problem. So you don't know the language that the person is going to talk to you, and you don't have to have a host of like agents for every language. So this is a Facebook Messenger example. And here, this was the first case where we actually use the scenario I talked to you about. So We do machine translation, we call QE, and here the sentence level is good enough because normally on chat you're talking about sentences. And then you either go to a human, or to a translator, sorry, or you basically return the machine translation. And this is really interesting because now we can have a chat in around 2 minutes. So you can be talking with someone that you don't know where he's coming from, and in 2 minutes you'll get the reply. And the quality is around 90% MQM. So I really like this use case. And so I guess, what's the future? So I think for us, I personally believe on this view. I don't believe that we're going to get to zero, but I think this is something interesting that people might have different opinions, like, where is this going? Is it neural machine translation or something that comes next going to basically take care of translation, or is always going to be there some percentage of jobs that need professional translation? Either 1, 5, 10, 15, 0, I don't really know. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. How much time do we have for questions? The sky's the limit. So, any questions?
Just a quick question. Your trainees, this is your crowd.
You can use the microphone.
Yeah.
Okay. Just a quick question. The people who are crowdsourcing this stuff, these are trainee translators, right?
Who, the ones that are recruiting them, that are evaluating? Yes. The crowd can be. We have a lot of professional translators. We have a lot of university students. When we started, for instance, one of the Facebook groups we used were stay-at-home moms, because they're basically there and they had time. They all get evaluated, and the people doing the evaluation are other professional translators or people with a degree in language, in linguistics. But we're not, like, our goal is not to cater to professional translators on the crowd.
Yeah, but it's native speakers that...
We try to have always a native speaker on the last point of touch before going to the customer. It's not always the case. And it doesn't always matter. So that's something we're still fine-tuning. So it's by definition, it's bilingual. And we try to route you as much information we can for your native tongue. But again, if we need to have to use a non-native just to keep the SLA, then we'll do it. Remember that for us, time is of the essence, because we're working on use cases that the SLAs are very strict, and we have to comply to them.
Talk, very interesting.
Thank you.
I wanted to follow up on that question. So you showed a number of places, like in the time to translate, that there are two people involved, right? Is that the case for basically everything that's running through Unbabel, that there's always two people, basically one person doing transfer and one person doing editing, or how do you view that?
More or less. So for the chat use case, there's only one. For all the rest, unless we have a strong signal that the quality is there, and we're still on time, we use two. Because again, until we're confident about the QE module to basically jump, we are sometimes, if the QE is really strong, like the amount of sentences that we deem correct is big enough, then we just use one. But normally we use two. That's why I like this quality estimation document level. For me, is kind of like the fundamental piece.
Hi, and thank you for this interesting presentation. So I just wanted to ask, is there a quality estimation for the human output as well? I wasn't quite sure about it.
Yeah, so that's basically what we've been working over the last 6 months, and we're putting it on production this quarter. It's different, like you can't train it on the normal data, but there is, and the results are more or less the same that you have to the other one, so they're pretty interesting results. I can talk with you about that in the break if you want.
Thank you. In your presentation, you said that there are several levels of evaluation for the translation, word level and sentence level as well as document level. So my question is, which level will be the threshold for the system to determine if the translation can be good enough to deliver to the customer directly or not?
It depends. So that's something that we need to study, like case by case, language by language. So I think, I don't know the exact value that we have right now to skip one person if there's enough sentences, but we basically fine-tune it. So we looked into the past, look at everywhere that we had two editors, and start looking at the quality that both of them produce, because you can evaluate both outputs. And then we got to a threshold for each language. Then if you have a new model, you have to basically do this process again. So the, I don't have a number like 7 to tell you.
Okay, so I think you mentioned at some point that you're collecting these corrections and the, some sort of MQM annotations as well. Could you comment on how you sort of fit that back into the MT pipeline to improve it?
Yes, so basic stuff is using it to evaluate smart check. The other thing is like we're looking into that for quality estimation models. Not to the MT directly yet, no.
Two microphone day. I personally like giving talks these days to translators because I think it's refreshing and you get a different point of view. So I wondered whether, firstly, if you have given a similar talk to a translator community, and secondly, if you have, what was their reaction?
I haven't given a talk. Sometimes we get hit really hard on public forums. But I mean, we, for instance, we're working with Sharon. We're working with two other professors of translation studies in Portugal. And I think that a lot of people on that area kind of see this as a future, as opposed to just re-killing them. I think there's a place in the world for everyone. I think there's some source of content really require professional expertise and domain expertise. Others don't. I mean, I don't think that you need like a professional translator to translate a chat conversation between me and you on Facebook. So I think there's space for everyone. But sometimes they don't like us a lot. It depends.
Thank you for the very nice talk. I have a question about editor assignment. You mentioned that you rank the editors who request jobs based on topics and some estimate of their speed and quality of the work. Is there perhaps a risk sometimes that you would like systematically omit one of the editors? So based on your ranking, maybe somebody basically never gets a job because they are always ranked lower than others. Do you have this problem and do you have to address it in some specific way?
Well, we have the problem. We haven't really addressed. So the question is, if a person is like on the bottom part of the rating, Basically we're always going to prime the better ones. You can always improve your rating by doing either like jobs if you get them, or free jobs to train, where you get a detailed feedback and you get to improve the rating. The topics, not so much. But then again, I mean, it's kind of like we need the best ones to do the job. So we do have a lot of people trying to play the system. This is a completely different topic of conversation that I can talk to you about in the coffee break. But that might happen. We never had somebody complaining about that. First of all, because we still have more editors than demand. So there's a lot of people that is not expecting to go to the platform and always have work. This is why notifications are so important. So you have to call them when there is work. And this is mobile works particularly well.
Thanks also for the talk. And I was curious about the size of the documents because the granularity is a critical thing. You've already mentioned that the document level quality estimation is like very important for you and you are working on that. So I was curious if you could tell us again how small the snippets are, especially for the mobile platform, and whether you split the document to give it to more editors, because then the consistency is obviously much harder to achieve.
So basically, on the top, on the domains that we're tackling more, so tickets or product descriptions, it's around between 100 to 400 words. Like, so tickets are small. And if they're really small, if they're like up to 100 words, then we don't split them, we just keep them entirely. If it's a product description, then we basically try to split into 50 words chunks. So 50 words up to sentences, we don't break sentences. And the idea there was like, when we're doing bigger pieces of content, to just basically make the first pass faster and let the final person look at it. But on average, it should be like 100 something.
So the final editor sees the whole document?
Yeah. So the idea of the final editor is to go there for consistency, because even assuming that each one of the other ones did the perfect job, they might have put like a different tone. No, because we actually should say the tone, but there might be some consistency issues. So for instance, we want to insert like lexical consistency as part of the interface. So once you make a decision, you can show everywhere what the decision was made by just making like lexical changes and showing them, but we haven't been able to implement that yet.
So do you think this will scale up to like large documents? Because all the documents that you have mentioned so far are rather short. So would Unbabel set up work also for like 100 pages document long?
I mean, so we did it, not 100 pages long, but like 15 pages long. Definitely the pipeline is not like optimized for that. Basically what that means is like at the end, the reviewer is going to have more work. But this is like the normal flow. Like you just take a huge document, give it to someone, say, now do it all. So, and he'll start from a better starting point because we have all the first part, but this is not really where we want to go. We would like to enforce consistency on the task level by basically having like communication between the tasks and having like lexical change, tone, and basically if this guy disrespects the other one, you warn him, some sort of that, but that's hard to implement.
And more question. that was on the neural MT. So you had the slide where the Google MT out of the box was much better than your neural setup because you have just started with implementing it yourself. And then you had other columns, and those were with 1,000 of was it like segments that you adapted? Joe, yep. What exactly was that?
So basically, that's taking the data that is passing through Unbabel from our customers, and assuming that the output that Unbabel produces is the truth, and then just retraining the model. Yeah. So what we're trying to see is like we have a lot of customers. Some of them are big, so we have a lot of data. Some of them are small and we don't have enough of data. So the question that we're answering is like how much data do we need that it's worth to change to our own customized model? Or if it's not enough, can we just put an ape model on top of Google Translate on a third party? Or can we cluster clients according to like topic, domain, and use that? So this is kind of like what we're trying to learn now.
Ideally, you would actually, for each customer, create an adaptation, adapt the model to the data as the data is coming.
Yes, because that's what's going to increase the green dots on the top.
Thank you.
A quick one. The same way as in projects like the Gutenberg project, they do repeated transcription to get like consensus. Have you ever tried to send the same job to more than one translator and see if that gives you an idea about quality?
Not on production, because that will kill us. Unless we didn't pay two editors, which is what normally happens on those projects, we'll basically having to be paying double two editors. And this is going to kill us the cost.
Doesn't make it.
Yeah. What we do is like we have a concept of fake task, where basically on a normal flow you have a text, one editor, he changes the text, and then he goes to the second one, he only sees the first one. So if you want to just like put all the editors in line and compare them, it's like apple to oranges. So what we have is something that we create one task, and now we send this to like all the editors. On the interface, they don't see the difference. It's exactly the same. But then with these ones, now you can like compare them and do a lot of testing. But yeah, that's just for internal use.
So we don't have, oh, we have question.
So I just wanted to ask a question about MT, actually. So maybe two things. One, does the MT actually really matter? I mean, whether it's phrase-based or moral, does it really actually make any difference? And second off, what would you like to see us do in terms of improving MT or as a piece of your pipeline?
Okay, so first question, I think it will impact a lot. So we're just switching, actually, to neural MT and getting the first results. Because the biggest problem with phrase-based MT was you have to think about the scenario where we're just going for speed. So people have to be as fast as they can. And so if there's something that's an error in adequacy, they will fix it. Those we can tackle. But then they will have the fluency, so you still get the word salad from phrase base on the final output. So the biggest complaint we have from our customers is like, you know, everything is here, but it sounds robotic. And sounding robotic is just like a fact of how phrase base is done. That goes away with Neural. Now, what we don't know, and this is what we're trying to discover, which is the other interesting part, is like Neural has the problem of dropping stuff on the source or doing really bad stuff on the source when it fails. And the question is like, are the editors going to pick it up properly? Can we put a smart check picking it up properly? Because if you think that a lot of times the translators just read the target and scheme over the source, if they start sending it because they think it's correct, then it's a big problem to us. So the problems are, I think there's going to be a lot of changes in all our infrastructure with this change, but it will matter a lot. Second question, I have a list of things I can give you outside, but one of the things is like, I don't know why people are not tackling document level machine translation more. I mean, it's the obvious thing that people need to solve, which is like, here, this is good.
But I think that's going to be a big area in a couple of years.
I hope so.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. So yeah, that's something very interesting.
So we don't have more questions. I'd like to thank our speaker. And just one thing, those of you who are on Twitter, you might want to tweet and retweet things carrying this. All right, so this is just to make more noise.
Thank you. So thanks again for the nice talk. And before we head off for the coffee break, please send me the